This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
It's my pleasure to welcome into the studio Peter Curdy, and we've had Peter on before to speak. We actually spoke last time, Peter, I think, about we wanted people to understand the difference between Islam as a religion and Islamic terrorism was sort of one of the things we spoke about, wasn't
it? That's right. That's what we did talk about.
Now, Peter has a probably slightly different view to the studio, outnumbered in here, on marriage equality. Peter's from the Centre for Independent Studies, and I want to thank them, as always, for providing us with great guests that provide sometimes an alternative view. So welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks very much.
We have, as you know, Australia at the moment, the rolls have closed. We're having a postal survey on marriage equality. A lot of people have enrolled. A lot of people have changed their details, which is encouraging for the democratic process. We, in this studio, we would like everyone to vote yes, and we have our reasons for that. But it's fair to say that you have you don't want people, you would like people to vote no, is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay.
My concern in the debate about marriage equality is really the protection of religious freedoms. And I should say the Centre for Independent Studies doesn't take a position on marriage equality. And my colleagues and I not just my own colleagues in the office, but in the broader CIS circle of supporters, there are differing points of view. So we are certainly not taking a line. My concern and the focus of my work is really within the protection of religious freedom, which I think is a fundamental human right and one that does need to be protected. And those who have a religious or faith-based objection to same-sex marriage and to marriage equality, I believe, should be free to pursue their practices around traditional marriage and should not be required to support a change in the law. That's it's quite a narrow focus, but it's a question that I think has ramifications throughout society.
Do you think the bill that Senator Dean Smith proposed, which we assume this is the bill that if it is a yes vote, this is the bill that the government will allow to go onto the floor of the House. Do you think that addressed that issue of religious freedom correctly and to the extent that it needed to?
That's a very good question because, in fact, the whole thing is cast about with uncertainty. We don't know what the government will put on the floor of the House if the vote is a yes vote.
We don't even know what the question is.
Yes. We don't know what the question is, even more important.
And in fact, it's very likely that the question is going to be framed in a way which is going to be stigmatising, I would
say. Potentially. There is the potential.
I would say.
It could be. So we don't know much, but let's assume that Dean Smith's bill does go to the floor of the House. I think it was a good start, but I think it needed to go further because it only really concerned ministers of religion and people who were immediately involved with the provision of marriage services. And people who do have a faith-based objection to changing the law on marriage would argue that, in fact, the ramifications of a change go much further. So what about faith-based adoption agencies, for example, or faith-based organisations that were involved in the provision of family services, or even schools? Would faith-based schools be required to affirm and to teach about same-sex marriage? So it goes beyond that, and I think that was really where the concerns arose. Much of this, of course, has arisen with a focus on what the Christian churches in Australia say, and it should be said, of course, that the Christian churches are not unified on this point of view. The Uniting Church takes a different view from the Anglican Church, of which I'm a minister, and even within the Anglican Church, there is a great diversity of views.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a bit of a franchise dispute going on.
It's a good way of putting it.
I know some openly gay Anglican priests who have taken a very pro yes approach to this campaign. I was going to say, on my way to the studio this morning, I walked past St. Michael's on Collins Street, who actually have Reverend Rick Holland has a huge rainbow flag out the front, and it says OMG, yes.
Mm. I've seen the picture. Yeah. I've seen
it's
the
fantastic.
Picture.
Mm.
Now, Peter, a slightly bit of a left field question.
There always is one, so I'm prepared.
Good. Are gays and lesbians God's work?
That's a really good question.
Is it nurture or nature?
Oh, nurture or nature is a difficult one. I don't know enough about the science of that. But if we can leave nurture or nature aside, are they God's work? Yes, I would say so. And I'm speaking for myself. I'm not speaking as a representative of the diocese of anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. And I think my own view about homosexuality is that it's the quality of the love between two people that is important rather than the gender. So I have worked for 30 years actually in the church now, but for many years in full-time ministry with many, many gay friends, colleagues, gay clergy, gay members of the congregation. And a lot of people had said to me over the years, what we need is stability in our relationships, and we believe that recognition in law in one form or another, not so much in those days with marriage equality, but with the legal status afforded by civil unions, for example, that would help gay and lesbian people in their private lives a great deal. And I always felt from those conversations that what counted was the way in which people committed themselves to each other. I had a colleague when I was in my last parish in Sydney, and he and his partner had been together for over 30 years. At that stage, my wife and I had not been married for 30 years, so he'd been together for many, many years, a long, enduring, stable relationship. And we would talk about these things, and I used to feel, well, what is there not that's Christian about that way of life? They were both very committed Christians. There was no promiscuity, something that is prevalent in straight and gay relationships. Mm-hmm. There was no infidelity. They had been constant. Is that a mark of Christian love? I would say it is, because I can't find anywhere in my heart or in my intellect to find a reason why it shouldn't be the case.
So I might say you're digging yourself a bit of a hole.
I think the interesting thing is actually that you're talking about the religious freedoms is kind of your stumbling block with this.
Why a stumbling block?
Well, in terms of your position on whether there should be a change to the marriage law is that you believe, no, there shouldn't be, because you're unsure about the religious freedoms that are going to be...
Carry on.
That are going to be basically made available to people who...
Or you feel the threat to those religious freedoms, because if we are God's work and you talk about, you know, these guys that you knew, and that was there was nothing in your mind that you could say that said this was wrong. Mm. If that's the case, then religious freedom, surely that religious belief needs to accommodate the fact that we're God's work.
But I don't speak for religious people.
Oh, no.
No, but
we're asking you. So as a Christian and a Christian scholar, that surely this issue of the religious freedoms, one is the government hasn't made it clear what the legislation's going to be. Shouldn't there be some accommodation and some compromise on both sides here to accept that, you know, when you said it's the quality of the love rather than the gender that's important, surely the religious, you know, the religions need to acknowledge that and accept and perhaps move their position a little bit, just as perhaps some in our community need to as well.
I think that's a very fair point. Rick Holland is one minister who has taken another a position that's more akin to your position. There are Anglican colleagues that I have in around the country who would share your point of view, but there are many who don't. Stepping back from that, I just want to ensure that those who don't support a change to the law have protections that allow them to live out their beliefs and to not just to believe but to practice their faith in an open way. Because it's not because I have a position on marriage equality, but because I think freedom of religion is a fundamental human right, which we do need to defend. And I think here is an issue where religious liberty is being threatened, in my view, and I think we need to respond to that.
Our community's advocating for the right to a legal marriage, not a religious marriage. Mm. So how can that be a threat to religions? We're talking about a legal institution enshrined by legislation. We're not talking about a religious ceremony.
Well, I think this is one of the ways that we will see through the issue. And I worked quite closely with Tim Wilson when he was the Human Rights Commission. Mm-hmm. And Tim always, and I think Tim was one of the foremost advocates in this country for religious freedom when he was at the Human Rights Commission. And I have great respect for him. He argued that, and I think this is right, that if there is a change to the law, we will see a separation of religious and civil celebrants.
But that exists now.
Yes, except that states, I'm a state celebrant, for example. I have a state celebrant number from New South Wales, that might cease, that the church might withdraw altogether from any kind of state involvement with marriage and would just have religious ceremonies. So a couple can come to me, they can get married, they are married in, their marriage is recognised by law because I'm a marriage celebrant, that's the word I was saying.
Yeah. Right.
I'm a marriage celebrant. And I think one of the things that Tim advocated, and I think that's probably how it would work out, that churches that did not support it would just withdraw from, as it were, the marriage business. The state
and
marriages.
Therefore the ceremony from a religious context would be seen different as a different event to a commitment from a legal perspective.
Sorry, say that again.
So you're saying that religious organisations who wanted to withdraw from providing marriage services to be able to protect their religious freedoms, so there would effectively be two separate things that occurred. One is the state recognised or the legally recognised entity or union, and the other would be the religious ceremony that people who believed and participated in that particular faith could go and procure.
I think that is correct. I think if the law were to change and chance of uncertainty, if that were to happen, you would get a marriage in church would not be a marriage in law.
And I think that's really interesting because I think that is probably the question that we should be debating and talking about, is that I think when we fundamentally start talking to people like yourself, when we come down to it, the love is love thing exists, but the challenge becomes because we've got this religious influence, if you will, into our legal system. So it's become so entwined that the conversation isn't actually about what it should be about. What we're talking about is the same legal rights in a committed relationship and the ability for us to actually participate in that.
I don't think it's the religion has become interwoven in our legal system. It's just that should secular law always require people who are religious to conform to the standards set by secular law?
Or and I guess can, and also the flip side
exemptions?
Of that too.
It goes
the other way as well.
You know, should I, should I accept or should I,
be forced to subscribe to that?
Be forced to accept what I would regard as a denial of my right to get married because I can't get married where I want. But I also say, if the church that you wanted to get married in doesn't welcome that ceremony and doesn't want that ceremony, why would you want to get married in that
exactly.
church?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, the important thing is this law, if it changes, is about civil marriage. It's not about church. And this is where a lot of the...
Well, this is what we're advocating, Macca. Mm. We don't know what the government's actually going to mind at the moment.
I mean, Peter, if you'd have been running this survey, how would you phrase the question, and would you then have actually put out there the legislation for discussion as to if you vote yes, this is how the law will change?
I'm sorry, I'm not going to accept the fundamental premise of your question because I actually think a plebiscite is a very bad way to resolve this issue.
Yes,
I agree.
I've got CIS colleagues who completely disagree with me on this. I'm not in favour of going to the people on difficult questions. To my mind, when we have a plebiscite, and this is not a referendum where there's a constitutional requirement for a referendum, but we've got to go to the country and we ask the people for it to make a decision about this, that's usually a symptom of some stasis or crisis in the parliament. That happened in Britain. That's why David Cameron eventually had to go to the people about the referendum, which led to Brexit. It's not something that I think we should do, because I think how you frame the question, how you frame the debate, how you fund the campaigns is a very difficult thing. My preference would have been for a party to have gone to the country with this as part of its platform. You elect us, this is what we'll do, and that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So having said that, I don't know how I would frame the question. I think what I'd seen as a proposal should there be a change to the Marriage Act to allow same-sex couples to marry? Was that one draft?
There was a thing going around, yeah.
I think the question, should the law be changed, is a fair enough question. I don't think you can go to the country and ask every Australian, how should the law be changed, or what provision should there be?
It's the job of the Parliament.
And you see, people say, oh, no, the people should decide. But what if there was a plebiscite on the death penalty? And everybody said, oh, no, we should have the death penalty back.
And I mean, also, you know, the Anglican Synod doesn't say, oh, look, we actually won't make a decision on this. We'll actually ask all the parishioners. They don't do that. You know, so it's the same principle that applies. Having said that, Peter, do you think there is, you know, this debate has been pretty divisive so far for a lot of people, and I think
hurtful. I think
you know, on both sides, I think it's going to become more hurtful. What would you say to people, whether they're yes or no supporters? What do you say to them about the debate and the discussion they should be having with their friends and their colleagues, and generally, what would you say to them?
I think it's a very good question. My own view is that same-sex marriage is coming. It will come to this country in one way or another. I think a new generation of kids going through schools can't even see what the issue is.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to come. I don't know if it'll come now or through this survey. I don't know, but it will come eventually. The survey, I think, the way the campaign, rather, has been conducted at the moment, with a certain amount of aggressive hostility on both sides, could, in my view, alienate people and get people's backs up.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone should be saying to anybody else, if you don't agree with me, you're a bigot, or that, you know, you're just fanning hatred, or you're against, or you're against. That seems to me to be un-Australian, actually, and it seems to be disrespectful.
Similar to the other side of the argument, which is, you know, your kids, yeah, absolutely.
I'm talking about both sides.
Yeah.
And I would like to see this being conducted in a more civil way, in a more even way. I mean, look what happened when Tim Wilson and Andrew Hastie had that discussion, a very civilised discussion, for the Bible Society, and they were sipping Cooper's beer. I mean, that was outrageous, in my view. There were Tim and Andrew having a perfectly civilised conversation. They were from the same...
The concern wasn't the conversation in that, though. The concern was a major brewery that profits off this community significantly participating in that kind of debate.
Well,
that
what's
was
the problem
concern
with Qantas? Qantas is profiting massively from this. That's another matter. I mean, I don't have a problem with Qantas making a commercial decision to support one side of the debate. There is a lot of value in what's the economists call the pink dollar.
Yeah.
So it's fine to take a position.
It's not about pink dollar. It's actually about reflecting society's views.
That's also what Alan Joyce says.
And an employer like Alan Joyce will argue that he has a very diverse workforce and a diverse customer base.
Yeah.
And he needs to be respectful and reflective of that, as do businesses. I mean, all the banks have come out supporting marriage equality. Yeah. I can't name a single bank that hasn't.
But how
most of the car industry has supported marriage equality.
This is just the question, because I don't know the answer. How comfortable is it for Qantas employees who don't take the Alan Joyce line, for example?
But how can you not, when we go back to what you talked about earlier on, which is that love is love?
And in basic,
irrespective of the gender of the people, love is love.
And in basic diversity principles, that's actually the conversation. It's actually about diversity and inclusion, regardless of sexuality, religion, gender, culture, everything.
But should there be a place in Qantas for somebody who doesn't take that point of view, doesn't share that position?
Absolutely. You know, I think the issue here is we shouldn't be having a survey like this. I think we all agree. The reality is the government has brought this on for a number of reasons. They can blame the Senate and, you know, everything else. Reality is they brought it on. It's a flawed process. They haven't been honest. I don't believe. They haven't even told us what the question is. They haven't said what the legislation is. I think it's shambolic, and it's a disgrace to our democracy that we should have such a flawed logistical nightmare to decide an issue about people's lives. So that's my view.
I don't think Peter disagrees with that.
No, and I think that's the challenge of this debate is I actually don't think we're actually all in violent disagreement. No. There are extremes in this debate, like any debate, but I think that's the challenge is that having a conversation about this has become so frustrating for all of us because at the heart of it we're all sitting here saying we all deserve the same civil liberties, but we've got this overlay that exists that makes it challenging for us to kind of just say, yep, this is what we should do and all agree. So it's a hard one.
You get the final word, Peter.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's great to have this conversation and I'm very grateful to have the chance to do it here in Melbourne with you.
Lovely.
I think that we need to keep talking and we need to share ideas and all times for all Australians to be respectful of one another and to just strengthen the bonds of our society and our community.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Peter Curdy from Centre for Independent Studies, not representing the Anglican Church. but representing his own view and putting it quite eloquently. Thank you for your time. Thank you for coming in. Look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, Mac, and thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.